Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter of Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalm chapter 59, which I will entitle, Deliver Me From My Enemies. From the title, you should probably deduce this is a Psalm of David because he was always talking about his enemies and desiring to get delivered of them. The heading of the Psalm is this, For the director of music to the tune of Do Not Destroy, of David, a miktam, when Saul had sent men to David's house in order to kill him. Well, let's tackle the heading first. I don't know what the tune of Do Not Destroy is. There was another psalm, I think it was the previous psalm, that was sung to that tune. Must have been a popular tune. We see that the psalm is of David. I'm assuming the heading is accurate, although it might not be inspired, but it's probably David. It's a miktam. What is a miktam? The NIV note says it's probably a literary or musical term. Wikipedia says that a miktam is a word of unknown meaning found in the headings of Psalms 16 and 56 through 60. GotQuestions.org has four speculations as to what a miktam is. Speculation number one, the root of the word miktam means engraving, so this must mean that the Psalms were so valued that they were engraved upon tablets for preservation. Speculation number two from GotQuestions.org, the word miktam means golden. So that would mean this psalm is as valuable as gold. Speculation number three, a miktam was a technical term to guide the singer. Speculation number four from gotquestions.org is that miktam was a technical term to denote the tune. Well, whatever it was, basically we don't know. We have this phrase that gives us the occasion of the psalm, this phrase in the heading, when Saul had sent men to David's house in order to kill him. We find that story in 1 Samuel 19, 11 through 13. Then Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him in order to put him to death in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be put to death. So Michal let David down through a window, and he went out and fled and escaped. Michal took the household idol and laid it on the bed and put a quilt of goat's hair at its head and covered it with clothes. In order to fool Saul's people who were coming in to kill David and to arrest him, they would look in there and say, Oh, here he is. Oops, it's an idol. It's not David. David has escaped. And so, in verse 1, when David says, Deliver me from my enemies, his enemies are Saul and Saul's henchmen. So let's read verses 1 through 5 of Psalms 59. David says this. He's praying, Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Set me securely on high away from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from those who do iniquity, and save me from men of bloodshed. For behold, they have set an ambush for my life. Fierce men launch an attack against me. Well, this is obviously referring to Saul's FBI agents who come to break into Saul's house and take his life. Now, David says that these fierce men have launched an attack against him in verse 3, the end of verse 3, Not for my transgression, David says, nor for my sin, O Lord. For no guilt of mine, they run and set themselves against me. Now, David's not trying to claim that he's sinless, that he is sinlessly perfect, like Adam was before Adam and Eve ate the fruit. No, he's talking about, I haven't done anything against Saul to deserve this, which is absolutely true. He was not guilty. And so David appeals to that, and he says at the end of verse 4, Arouse yourself to help me and see. Verse 5, You, O Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to punish all the nations. Do not be gracious to any who are treacherous in iniquity. Selah. Now we have a problem in verse 5, because David says, You, O Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to punish Saul? To punish Saul's henchmen? No. To punish all the nations. Why in the world does David go from a desire to punish Saul for what Saul is doing to David? Why does David escalate from that to ask God to punish all the nations? That is a problem. It seems somewhat strange. I'm going to give you three possible solutions. Here's one from Gill, Benson, and Barnes, the commentators. The Israelites were acting like the heathen nations. And so when David says, awake to punish all the nations, he is talking about Israelites who are acting like they are Gentile nations. That's not what it says. It doesn't sound like that to me, even though I got three commentators and there may be more who say that. It doesn't sound like it to me. Now, Adam Clark gets around the problem by saying that this psalm refers to the time of Nehemiah, when the surrounding heathen tribes attempted to stop the building of Jerusalem's wall. Well, that means you have to totally discount the heading, which I hate to do. I mean, it's possible, it's not inspired, but that's just a speculation. Here's what the Cambridge Commentary says. It is possible that, as in Psalms 7, the prayer for a judgment upon personal enemies, i.e. Saul, is expanded into a prayer for a judgment upon all the enemies of Israel, and in that general judgment the treacherous Israelites who are iniquitously plotting against the psalmist's life will meet their due reward. So the Cambridge Commentary just says, the nations need to be punished, and that would include, of course, the nation of Israel for what they're doing to me. And David just wanted vindication from everybody. That's a difficult problem to me. I lean toward the third option, the Cambridge Commentary's option, that David just expanded his scope of desired targets. David finishes verse 5 by saying, do not be gracious to any who are treacherous in iniquity. Do not be gracious. Ooh, that sounds very unloving, does it not? That's an imprecation. And we've talked about David's imprecatory psalms so many times. He was the future king of Israel. He was not asking for private vengeance. He was asking for justice and self-defense. Whether he was a king or not really doesn't matter. If you're trying to defend yourself, there's nothing wrong with saying, God, take this guy down before he kills me. Nothing wrong at all. Now, in the first part of verse 5, David says, awake to punish the nations. In the last part, he says, don't be gracious to those who are treacherous. Well, if you say that nations and the treacherous ones are in parallel, then David would be talking only about the nations in verse 5, which seems a little strange because Saul is giving him the worst problem. Or it could be that in the first part of verse 5, David is saying, punish all the nations, the Gentiles. And then in the last part of verse 5, he's saying, don't be gracious to any who are treacherous, i.e. Saul and his Jewish compadres. I think that's what it is. Cambridge Commentary says, if you take the treacherous ones who David doesn't want God to be gracious to, then you are saying that the psalm could not have been written by David. That seems a little strong to me, but that's what the Cambridge Commentary says. At least it means that the heading is not right, because the heading says this was referring to David when he had to escape from Michael's house. And of course, Selah is that unknown term which probably means something about a pause or an interlude. We go now to Psalms 59, verses 6 through 10. They, David continues, and the they refers to Saul's people who are coming after him. They return at evening. They howl like a dog and go around the city. Behold, they belch forth with their mouth. Swords are in their lips, for they say, who hears? But you, O Lord, laugh at them. You scoff at all the nations. Because of his strength, I will watch for you, for God is my stronghold. My God in his loving kindness will meet me. God will let me look triumphantly upon my foes. Now, verse 6, when David says they return at evening, that matches perfectly when Saul's messengers tried to kill David at David's house. It was in the evening. They howl like a dog and go around the city, like Saul's messengers did after Michael let David out the window. The messengers go around the city looking for David. Where is he? Where is he? He's gone. Verse 7, behold, they belch forth with their mouth. Swords are in their lips. There's two things that we see as metaphors in the Psalms referring to swords, lips and tongues. And when David says swords are in their lips, he's saying they're slandering me. And so that childhood expression, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me, is a lie. It's a myth. Words can hurt you. You can be sued for defamatory words. I've said that many, many times in these audios. Here are two other Davidic psalms which express the same idea about the tongue being a sword. Psalm 57:4, my soul is among lions. I must lie among those who breathe forth fire. Even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. Their tongue is a sharp sword. Psalm 64:3, David again, who have sharpened their tongue like a sword. They aimed bitter speech as their arrow. So it's a common metaphor. David doesn't like people saying bad things about him, which they do all the time. Now, why are their lips swords? Because at the end of verse 7, Saul and his messengers say, who hears? Here's a psalm by David that expresses the same idea. Psalms 10, verse 11. He, talking about the evil person, he says to himself, God has forgotten. God has hidden his face. He will never see it. In other words, the evildoer thinks he can get away with it. he can commit sins or crimes and God's never going to see it or hear about it. Psalm 94:7, this is by an unknown author. They have said the Lord does not see. They, meaning the bad guys, have said the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob pay heed. That's what all criminals do. They think they're never going to be called to account, and so they go ahead with their crime and say, ha, ha, ha. David says in verse 8, but you, O Lord, laugh at them. You scoff at all the nations. Now again, we have the problem of why David is concerned about the nations here. And again, the idea is if he's mad at the nations, he's going to take care of what's in the nation too. He's big enough to do that. I think that's what David's getting at here. Now, David says in verse 8 that God scoffs at all the nations. He's laughing at them. He's not worried about all the nonsense. To make a present-day application, he's not worried about Xi Jinping. He's not worried about Vladimir Putin. He's not worried about Kim Jong-il. He's not worried about Joe Biden. Oh, I'm so sorry I put him in the same category as those bad people. But he's laughing at all the evil that they do. I mean, Joe Biden has made it very clear he wants to kill every baby that's in his mother's womb if the mother so desires, by not only his appointments to his administration, but also by his public pronouncements. Well, I was laughing at that. He's going to bring justice for all the human beings that are killed in their mother's wombs. He's going to get justice for that. He's laughing at all these people. I wish I could laugh with him, but I get a little intimidated by their earthly power. But we need to remember that God is sovereign over all tyrants in the world. God scoffs at all the nations. He laughs. Here's some other scriptures expressing the same idea. Psalm 2, which is a Davidic psalm. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Talking about the bad guys. Psalm 37:13. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees his day is coming. Your day's coming, leftist, secular leftist who hate God, who hate the fact that God created men and women as men and women. Your day is coming. I don't know when it is. I hope I'm alive to see it. Now, verse 9 has a translation problem. This is the NASB. I'm reading, because of his strength, I will watch for you, for God is my stronghold. Now, what does that mean, because of his strength? Whose strength? Well, that would have to be because of the bad man's strength. The ones going around howling like a dog, belching with their mouth, swords in their lips. Because of that man's strength, God will need to be called on by David. Because of the evil men's strength, David will watch, will confidently wait in expectation for you, God. For God is my stronghold. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that if you translate it that way, with this reading, I can make no sense of the passage. Well, I just made some sense out of it. I don't know why Clark has so much trouble. But most of the translations don't go that way. So let me read you some translations. There's two groups of translations. One is the translation that says it's because of the bad man's strength, his strength. And the other translations refer the strength to David. It's my strength, my David's strength. You, God, are my strength, David says. All right, so let's take the translations that say because of his strength, the bad guy's strength. I just read you the NASB. Also, we can look at the KJV. Because of his strength will I wait upon thee, for God is my defense. Psalm 59:9 in the ASV, American Standard Version, because of his strength I will give heed unto thee. Because of the strength of the enemy, I need to give heed unto you, God. And then the Holman Christian Study Bible, Psalm 59:9, I will keep watch for you, my strength. So now we see some translations that translate it as God is David's strength. The NIV says, O my strength, I watch for you. So that's David saying, my strength. God, you are my strength. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown agrees with the NIV translation. They say, by judicious expositors and on good grounds, this is better rendered, O my strength, on thee will I wait. And that's how the NIV takes it. That's how the Holman Christian Study Bible takes it. That's how the New American Bible takes it. My strength, David says, for you I watch. God's Word translation, Psalm 59:9, O my strength, I watch for you. So that's how we're going to take it. All right, so David says, because of my strength, O my strength, I will watch for you. And remember, watch means confident expectation, not just like you're looking for a train coming down the track. Now, one of my commentators says that the verse could be translated this way, to thee I commit all my strength. So we got three options. The strength could belong to David's enemies, the strength could belong to God, or the strength could belong to David. The Hebrew is a little ambiguous. Now, verse 10 says this, "My God in his loving kindness will meet me." This is David speaking. "God will let me look triumphantly upon my foes." The NIV translates that verse this way, "God will go before me and will let me gloat over those who slander me." Look triumphantly upon my foes is gloat over those who slander me. NIV has it a little bit more colorfully. We go now to Psalms 59, verses 11 through 17. David continues his prayer. "Do not slay them, or my people will forget. Scatter them by your power, and bring them down, O Lord, our shield. On account of the sin of their mouth and the words of their lips, let them even be caught in their pride, and on account of curses and lies which they utter. Destroy them in wrath. Destroy them that they may be no more, that men may know that God rules in Jacob to the ends of the earth. Selah. They return at evening. They howl like a dog and go around the city. They wander about for food and growl if they are not satisfied. But as for me, I shall sing of your strength. Yes, I shall joyfully sing of your loving kindness in the morning. For you have been my stronghold and a refuge in the day of my distress. O my strength, I will sing praises to you. For God is my stronghold, the God who shows me loving kindness." Now, David in verse 11 says something that's a little bit strange to me. Do not slay them. Do not slay them. There's an apparent inconsistency with Psalm 59:13, just two verses later. In Cambridge commentary points out that apparent inconsistency because that verse says, verse 13 of this psalm, consume them in rage. Consume them until they are gone. Then people will know throughout the earth that God rules over Jacob. Do not slay them in verse 11 and consume them till they're gone in verse 13. Well, how do we explain the apparent inconsistency? The Cambridge commentator says, burning indignation does not study logical consistency. In other words, David is inconsistent here? I don't think so. I mean, you could say that, well, David didn't want them to be slain in the short term, but in the long term, he did want them to go down. And so in verse 13, when he says destroy them in wrath, he means their end. He just wants it to be a long, lingering death. He doesn't want them to be slain all at once at first. I think that's a much better way to explain that apparent inconsistency. David wants his enemies to be a living memorial to divine judgment, as the Cambridge commentator claims. Quote, Pharaoh might have been cut off at once, but was suffered to exist till his obstinate resistance sealed his doom and enhanced God's sovereignty. And that really is true. I mean, people are making movies about the Ten Commandments and the judgments on Egypt, even to this day, Cecil B. DeMille and all that. That wouldn't have happened if God had just wiped out Egypt all at once, but instead he drew it out, made a long story out of it, and we remember it to this day. And so that's what David means in verse 11. He says, don't slay them or my people will forget. In other words, don't just wipe them out right now. It'll be over with. I want the Jews, my people, to remember how you destroyed my enemies, not only the nations, but also from Saul. And of course, today we still remember. We have not forgotten the persecution of David by Saul. This is what Adam Clark says on the matter. Quote, I believe the Chaldee gives the true sense of this verse. Do not slay them suddenly, lest my people should forget. Drive them from their habitations by thy power, and reduce them to poverty by the loss of their property. Preserve them long in a state of chastisement, that Israel may see thou hast undertaken for them, that thy hand is on the wicked for evil, and on them for good. The Canaanites were not suddenly destroyed. They were left to be pricks in the eyes and thorns in the sides of the Israelites. It is in a sense somewhat similar that the words are used here. A long, drawn-out punishment so that everybody will get the picture. At the end of verse 11, David says, scatter them by your power. The KJV says the same. The NIV says, make them wander about by your power. Bring them down, O Lord, our shield, on account of the sin of their mouth and the words of their lips. Let them even be caught in their pride, and on account of curses and lies which they utter. So here are sins of the tongue, sins of the lips, which David has previously compared to arrows, swords. Let them go down because of that. The NIV has for the sins of their mouths, for the words of their lips, let them be caught in their pride. Boastful, arrogant words. Verse 13, destroy them in wrath, destroy them that they may be no more. That means that they will die. No more in the land of the living. They're gone. Let that be. Some imprecations here. Nothing wrong with that. David is writing in self-defense, "Destroy them, that men may know that God rules in Jacob to the ends of the earth." Now, that could be to the ends of the land, depending on how you want to translate
Haaretz.
He's talking about the knowledge of God. It probably refers to the ends of the earth, the whole world, because God is judging the nations, as David's asked. But it could be that God rules in Jacob to the ends of the land, all the way in Jacob, so that there are no more enemies in Jacob, in Israel. Verse 14, they means the bad guys. Saul's messengers return at evening. They howl like a dog and go around the city. That's exactly the same as verse 6, which says, they return at evening. They howl like a dog and go around the city. I don't know if there's anything textual there or whether it's just repeated for emphasis. Now remember, these dogs back in ancient Near Eastern times, they're not Fido. They're not Roger, curled up on the hearth with the flickering fire, making them sleepily snore as they keep you company. No, these were junkyard dogs, those nasty, flea-bitten, mange-ridden, fang-bearing, wolf-looking-like animals that will eat you up. Verse 15, they wander about for food and growl if they are not satisfied. So these dogs are said to howl in a previous verse, and here they are growling. Howling and growling. That's how David describes his enemies. The NIV, instead of howl, says snarl. The dogs are snarling. The KJV and the Young's Literal Translation say the dogs are making a noise. Psalm 59:14. And they turn back at evening, these dogs. They make a noise like a dog, and they go around about the city. Interestingly, verse 14 in the KJV is not stated as a fact, but rather as an imprecation. And at evening, let them return and let them make a noise like a dog and go around about the city. In other words, let them be punished and hungry so that they're upset, so they're howling and growling. I don't know. I think the other translations are probably better to put it in the indicative. Now, verse 14 says that David's enemies return at evening, and my question upon reading that is this: return from where? Well, here's how this works. The enemies have come initially at night. They search unsuccessfully all night for David until morning comes. And so then the enemies have not found David, so they leave. And the next evening they come back. They return to look for David. Now these howling dogs go around the city. Verse 15, they wander about for food and growl if they are not satisfied, as I said. Verse 16, but on the contrary, but as for me, David says, I shall sing of your strength. Yes, I shall joyfully sing of your loving kindness in the morning. So the dogs have come back at evening, morning's here, and David's singing because he's delivered. They haven't found him. His enemies have not. David has another psalm about the happiness of the morning in Psalms 35. In Psalms 30, verse 5, for his anger is but for a moment, his favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may last for the night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. Morning seems to be for David a symbol of triumph. So why is David singing in the morning? Because at the end of verse 16, for you, God, have been my stronghold and a refuge in the day of my distress. Now this repeats what David had said earlier in the psalm, Psalms 59:9. I will keep watch for you, my strength, because God is my stronghold. And what David says here in verse 16 not only looks back to verse 9 about God being David's strength, but also anticipates verse 17, the next verse, the verse that we're on now. In this Psalm 59, verse 17, David says, O my strength, referring to God, I will sing praises to you, for God is my stronghold, the God who shows me loving kindness. Let's summarize the three places in Psalms where David refers to God as his strength. Psalm 59:9, I will keep watch for you, my strength, because God is my stronghold. Psalm 59, verse 16, first part of the verse, but as for me, I shall sing of your strength. And now finally, in verse 17, David says, O my strength, I will sing praises to you. That's a good way to end this psalm. God is a powerful God. He's a strong God. He will stretch forth his hand to protect his saints. Ladies and gentlemen, with that positive note, we have now finished Psalms 59, and we're now ready to go to Psalm 60 in our next audio, and we will entitle that psalm, He Will Tread Down Our Foes. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.